I cannot stand the idea of being just a number, just a statistic, caught up in a conveyor belt kind of life. Does anybody else share that, or is that just me? The idea of just being part of a process, part of a machine, doing what everyone expects you to do and fitting the mould that everyone pushes you into, having your choices made for you, that, I can't stand that idea. When I was at school, I used to hate wearing school uniform because it made you look all the same, didn't it? And half the teachers wouldn't even bother to learn your name. I was just you boy to a whole load of the teachers when I was at school. So actually, when I was at school, I decided to grow my hair really long because it was one of the few things that you could do to look different from everyone else. Only my hair, when it gets long, it doesn't grow long like this, it grows long like this. So for 5 years at high school, I looked like a loo brush with a perm. But they learnt my name. They learnt my name. Because who wants to be just part of the crowd? Nobody does, do they? Who wants to be just part of the crowd? Have you ever noticed we're surrounded by people that tell us that we're all unique and then treat us like we're all the same? Have you ever noticed that? When I was growing up, I remember people telling me that I was always told, yeah, be you, be who you are, be yourself. And they would tell you that right up to the point where you are you and who you are and start to be yourself. And then they punish you for it and try and push you back into your box. Have you noticed that? Anybody else, or is it really just me? Yeah, I'm getting a few nods, one or two people. I became a Christian when I was 17 years old. So I was at college, I was in year 12, or if you think in the old money, that's lower sixth. And I had some really good friends at that time who were very serious about their faith. And I got interested. And I started asking questions and I started to find out about Jesus for myself. And I think probably the first step was me realizing that I wasn't already a Christian, because I believed in God and I thought that made me a Christian. And what I started to discover was there's a lot more to it than just believing in God. But everything I discovered about Jesus started to make sense. The dots all started to join up. It all started to make sense in my head. But all that time, there was a part of me wondering, is this just going to be another uniform I have to put on? Is it just going to be another set of rules that I have to follow? Is it going to be just another crowd that I have to disappear anonymously into? Is that what would happen if I decided to become a Christian? Will I lose my individuality and go through some sort of religious sausage machine and come out looking like all these other Christians? Because I didn't really fancy that, because frankly, some of them are quite weird. Is that what was going to happen? And will God be up there looking at me going, you boy, what's your name? Do your tie up and stand up straight? Because if that was the deal, then frankly, I wasn't really very interested. I'm going to ask Rob to read a story out of the Bible. This is in the New Testament of the Bible, and it shows how God deals with one particular individual.
Reading from Acts Chapter 9, verses 1 to 22, Saul's conversion. Meanwhile, Saul was still breathing out murderous threats against the Lord's disciples. He went to the high priest and asked him for letters to the synagogues in Damascus, so that if he found any there who belonged to the way, whether men or women, he might take them as prisoners to Jerusalem. As he neared Damascus on his journey, suddenly, a light from heaven flashed around him. He fell to the ground and heard a voice say to him, Saul, Saul, why do you persecute me? Who are you, Lord? Saul asked. I am Jesus, whom you are persecuting, he replied. Now, get up and go into the city, and you will be told what you must do. The men traveling with Saul stood there speechless. They heard the sound, but did not see anyone. Saul got up from the ground, but when he opened his eyes, he could see nothing. So they led him by the hand into Damascus. For 3 days he was blind and did not eat or drink anything. In Damascus, there was a disciple named Ananias. The Lord called to him in a vision, "Ananias." "Yes, Lord," he answered. The Lord told him, "Go to the house of Judas on Straight Street and ask for a man from Tarsus named Saul, for he is praying. In a vision, he has seen a man named Ananias come and place his hands on him to restore his sight." "Lord," Ananias answered, "I've heard many reports about this man and all the harm he has done to your saints in Jerusalem. And he has come here with authority from the chief priests to arrest all who call on your name." But the Lord said to Ananias, "Go. This man is my chosen instrument to carry my name before the Gentiles and their kings and before the people of Israel. I will show him how much he must suffer for my name." Then Ananias went to the house and entered it. Placing his hands on Saul, he said, "Brother Saul, the Lord Jesus, who appeared to you on the road as you were coming here, has sent me so that you may see again and be filled with the Holy Spirit." Immediately, something like scales fell from Saul's eyes, and he could see again. He got up and was baptized, and after taking some food, he regained his strength. Saul spent several days with the disciples in Damascus. At once he began to preach in the synagogues that Jesus is the Son of God. All those who heard him were astonished and asked, "Isn't he the man who caused havoc in Jerusalem amongst those who call on his name? And hasn't he come here to take them as prisoners to the chief priests?" Yet Saul grew more and more powerful and baffled the Jews living in Damascus by proving that Jesus is the Christ.
Brilliant. Thanks, Rob.
I wonder whether you noticed how individual that was, how personal it was in the way that God dealt with Saul. When God reaches out into somebody's life, he doesn't carpet bomb a crowd. He picks his man or woman and he knocks them off their horse. It is very, very individual. He might be the God of the whole universe. He might love everybody in the room and everybody in the city and everybody on the planet. But when he comes looking for you, it's going to be personal. It's going to be individual. And so God spoke to Saul very directly. And he said, "Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me?" He knew who Saul was. He knew what his name was. And he knew exactly what he'd been up to. And it was almost like in that moment, God shut everybody else out and just dealt one-to-one with Saul. There was nothing conveyor belt about it. There was nothing anonymous about it. In fact, God will create circumstances and events and meetings and whatever it takes when he decides to make his presence felt in your life. He will create a whole load of circumstances just to make that happen. Look at Ananias, the other person that came into that passage later on. As far as he was concerned, Saul was there, had come to town with one aim in mind, and that was to hunt down and to execute the Christians. He was the enemy of the Christians. And if Ananias bumped into Saul on the street, it was only ever going to go down one way, and that was going to be that Saul was going to leave on his horse, and Ananias was going to leave in a box, or perhaps in a few paper bags, because they really didn't mess about in those days. And God spoke to Ananias and said, "I want you to go and chat to Saul." And Ananias did probably the same as you or I would do and said, "I don't think so, God. Do you know who this guy is?" But God insisted, and Ananias was obedient, and the rest is history. But the point is that God was willing to mess around with Ananias' schedule and a whole load of other people's if it meant he could break into the life of just one person. And he's willing to do exactly the same to meet with you. So I wonder why you think you've come to church today. You might be under the impression that you've come here to see Chelsea and Lewis get their baby done. But God's here, and he knows you. And it might just be that he's reaching out to you personally, individually, if you'll give him the time and the space to speak to you. Years ago, 25 years or so ago, I had a job thing that made me move to America. And when I first moved over there, there were a couple of things going on in my life at the same time. One of which was obviously that I was getting used to living in a new country that was very different. And the other of which was that I was kind of running away from God. I was a Christian, but various things had been going on and I'd stopped going to church. And I wasn't sure whether, when I got to this new country, whether I was going to go to church at all. But I did. One time, I thought, I'll give one of the local churches a go and just see what it's like. And so I walked into this church, new country, new city, obviously didn't know a soul there, and went to a service that was quite loud, quite exciting in all sorts of ways. And the preacher was one of those scary preachers that at the end of the sermon, he had talked about some stuff that kind of hit home. Do you know what I mean? He talked about some stuff that really related to what I was going through, and it felt quite personal. And then at the end, he did that scary thing that just occasionally happens in church, because God does speak to people, and he said, there are three people in this room who need to respond to what I've just said, and I want you to come to the front, and I'd like to pray for you. And as he said that, my heart doubled in rate, and the palms of my hands started to sweat, and I knew two things. One was that it was me, and the other was that I would die before I would walk to the front of that church and own up to the fact that it was me. So I sat in my seat and said, not a chance, God, deal with somebody else. And the preacher said, there are three people that need to respond to this message. And somebody stood up way over there, and I was like, fantastic. And then somebody else stood up over there, and I was just sitting there going, I'm not going to do this, God. I am not going to go. And then to my delight, a third person stood up and walked to the front of the church. And I was in my seat, yes! And this preacher looked at the third person and said, thank you so much, but it's not you. And in that moment, I gave in and I stood up. And as soon as I stood up, he pointed at me and said, there he is. God won't always deal with you like that. But I think some of us have in our minds the idea that God's a little bit like Twitter. You know, God sends a message out and sits back, sends a message to the whole world and sits back waiting to see whether anybody at all will respond. And it's not like that at all. Who can I pick on and embarrass for a moment? I don't know anybody. Katie, can I embarrass you? If I come and talk to you like this, you know that I'm talking to you, not anybody else in the room. It's a little bit threatening because it's a bit weird when the preacher does it. But when God speaks to you, it will be like that. It won't be like this. It won't be like Twitter. It will be like you get a text. It's very personal and it's very individual. And if you're open to it, he will speak to you. And God doesn't just speak, in the Bible story, God doesn't just speak to Saul personally. He makes it really clear that he knows him through and through. He knows everything about him. That nothing in Saul's history was a barrier to what God wanted to do. And this is a bloke who was literally hunting down Christians to have them executed, dragging them out onto the street and getting them stoned by an angry mob. And that is who God is. Picked. That is who God chose to work through. So do you really think that you have managed to do anything that would make God keep you at arm's length? That's what we mean when we talk about grace in church. It means knowing that in God's hands, your past does not define your future. That's what the word grace means. And we sing Amazing Grace because it is amazing. It's knowing that in God's hands, your past does not define your future. There might be stuff in your life that you keep hidden from other people. There might be stuff in your life that you keep so well hidden that you don't even like to own up to it to yourself. There might be stuff that if you could wrap it up and tie it round a stone and throw it into the sea and get rid of it that way, you'd still wake up in a cold sweat at night just in case somebody found it and found out about it. But nothing, not even those things, will make God choose to keep you at arm's length. Because he's already there, he's already seen it, he already knows it, and he still wants to be in your life. And that's what grace is. That's what those words that we sung a few minutes ago mean.
There's a story on the internet about Thomas Edison, who was the guy who invented the, well, he probably wasn't, but he claims to be the guy that invented the light bulb. And it's probably not a true story because it's on the internet and, yeah, what are the chances that it's real? But who knows? It's a good illustration. So let me tell you. The story goes that that when Thomas Edison finally sussed out the design of a light bulb, that it took him and his team of staff 24 hours straight working in their laboratory to make the first ever light bulb. And that when he'd finished it, he gave it to the youngest member of the team, who was barely more than a boy, to take the bulb and to plug it in and to test it. But the boy was young and he was nervous and he was basically really clumsy, and he dropped it and it shattered into 1,000 pieces all over the floor, and they had to start all over again. And they had to work another solid 24 hours to create the second ever light bulb. And according to the story, Thomas Edison, when the second one was finished, gave it to the same boy to take and to plug in and to test. And I know it's probably not real. It all sounds a little bit too Disney, doesn't it, to be real. Most probably Thomas Edison plugged the boy in and gave the light bulb to somebody else. But because who in their right mind would ignore somebody's mistakes and give them a second chance like that? Well, God does. God does. I've been a Christian for quite a few years. I've been a Christian for 35 years or so. And there have been thousands of times in the time that I've been a Christian, that by rights, God should have said, yeah, thanks, Paul, that's enough. You've blown it. Off you go, I'll find somebody else to do the things that I was going to get you to do. But he doesn't. He treats me like I've never messed up, like I've never hurt people, like I've never put myself first and other people after, like I've never let him down in the thousands of ways that I have. But God chooses to wipe that history out. Not because he doesn't know, not because he's a forgetful old man, but he knows everything about me, including the bits that I wish he didn't know. But because Jesus died to take those things away, God gives me another chance over and over. When Jesus suffered and died, it wasn't for a mass of anonymous sins. It was personally for the things that I've done wrong, and personally for the things that you've done wrong as well. And so his invitation to each one of us is personal. So, little Finley, who's way too young to understand any of what I've been saying the last 15 minutes, but maybe one day you'll watch the video and it'll make sense to you. But your life is not on a conveyor belt, at least it doesn't have to be. God has made you uniquely, and he will speak to you in unique ways. And he's got plans for you. He's got plans to give you life to the very fullest. And they're different from anybody else in the room. In fact, they're different from anybody else on the planet. May you never get pushed into somebody else's mold for you. May you discover what it means to live life known individually by the God who made you. And everybody else in the room and everybody watching online as well, exactly the same thing is true. May you discover what it is to know the God who knows you uniquely. Amen.